listening to my daddy's show.
Welcome, Cardinals fans, to Conversations with C70. Please welcome your host, Daniel Shoptaw. Click and play, familiar tone, Shoptaw speaks, here on my headphones, yeah, he plays it calm, but that man is funky, yeah, but what can I say, I'm a C70 junkie. Yeah, he'll take you on the team with the blogging scene. Talk the moves of the Cardinals and what they mean. He always has a real cool guest. He'll talk the Redbirds for all the rest. He's got his awesome kids to lead it off. And now he's got this sweet theme song. A blogging, tweeting baseball man. Sit back and listen, you'll become a fan. I'm a C70 junkie, a C70. I'm a C70 junkie, a C70. I'm a C70 junkie, a C70. Now your host, Daniel Shoptaw.
You are listening to my daddy's show. Go Cardinals.
And we welcome you to a special edition of, well, Conversations with C70. We'll say that. Because I've got my Gateway co-host, Tara Wellman, with me. I've also got Adam Butler from the Cardinal Conclave at Bird Law, in the Bird Law podcast. Joining me, Daniel Shoptaw, C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter, to talk about the mid-season. We're here at the All-Star break, and we kind of started planning this show, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, and we thought, well, we'll have a few things to talk about. And then the Cardinals gave us a little bit more to talk about yesterday, firing Mike Matheny late last night. Adam, let's just start with you. And when you got that news, when you saw that come down, what was your first reaction?
Oh, so it's funny. I was actually at the game yesterday and waited through all the rain delays. And I went with my brother, who lives out of town, and I was telling him all day, I was like, I don't know how you can go into Chicago with Mike Matheny and say you're trying to win when DeWitt just said that he thinks the team has the talent to win. And I was telling him all day, I was like, I don't know how you can do that. And so we were on our way home and he nudges me and says, hey, they just fired Matheny. And I'm like, what do you mean they just fired Matheny? And I start scrolling through, he's like, yeah, it's the Cardinals Twitter account. I was like, check that again. That's not the real account. It can't be. And I looked in it, and sure enough, it was. And I was just, I mean, it was shock mostly. I mean, I don't know. It was a weird feeling because we've been thinking it should happen, and I was half expecting it to happen, I guess. But I thought it would happen over the break. I certainly didn't think it would happen last night. And it's a weird spot feelings wise because I don't know. I never like when people lose their jobs. I never want to see that. But it was something that I've thought should happen for a few years now. And, it's sort of energizing in a way. That's probably not the best word, but it sort of makes you excited again about, you know, the prospects for the second half, for me at least. So I don't know about you guys, but that was how I took it. Was, you know, I couldn't believe it at first, but, you know, especially once I saw that Schilt was the replacement, I was pretty excited.
Terry, you and I have said a lot of times, in fact, I think even last week, that the Cardinals needed to pick a direction. Well, it finally feels like they have, at least in some regard. They've taken the biggest step that we've seen in a number of years. What was your reaction when you found out last night?
Similarly, it was very strange because we've all watched games in the last couple of seasons where we felt like they have to fire him after this game. This has to be, I mean, they can't keep going like this, and then they don't. So there was this weird sort of back and forth going on, this strange internal dialogue with myself trying to, you know, sort of figure out why it just felt like something had to give. And I had several conversations with people throughout the game, throughout the rain delays, and there was a lot of talk about, man, I really think the Cardinals might do it. They might fire Mike Matheny. But there was always this sort of nagging in the back of my head. They're not going to do it mid-season. If they were going to fire Mike Matheny, they probably would have done it already. It's going to have to get way worse than one game over 500 at the break. So I had been checking my phone very consistently, and I was afraid to get up and go do anything after the game because I was like, sure enough, as soon as I do, like go take a shower or something, that's when something dramatic is going to happen. And it didn't. So I had literally set my phone down and I went and like brushed my teeth or something that just took a minute. And that's when it all happened. And all of a sudden my phone started buzzing and, there were tweets and texts and it all happened at once. And I agree. I think it was a very weird feeling because I was actually thinking about this during the game last night. As much as we've talked about wanting Mike Matheny to not be the manager for the St. Louis Cardinals going forward, I was like, man, I think I'm actually going to be sad when it eventually happens. Not because I still want him to be the manager, but because what a great story it would have been for Mike Matheny to come back and manage the St. Louis Cardinals to a World Series and, you know, kick off what should be a great career in this next phase of his baseball life. And that just wasn't going to happen. So there's definitely a sad sentiment to the way that this era has ended. But I agree. There's a new sense of hope and excitement and interest, if nothing else, to see what the St. Louis Cardinals do going forward. And that's not something I've said for quite a while with this team.
Yeah, I'm like you. Both of you, I had sat down and was sitting in the bedroom and I had just picked up the phone and I look and I see this press release on Twitter. And you know how people are. They go fake these things all the time, you know, Mike Matheny fired on the letterhead, whatever. And I'm like, nah. And then I look and I see the blue check mark and I'm like, huh? Wait a minute. And yeah, it was, and then of course, yeah, like you say, Tara, that you know, everybody starts confirming it and all of this stuff. It is somewhat sad. I mean, you do look at the human side of this and, you know, Mike Matheny is no longer employed. Granted, he's getting paid. So maybe that tempers some of my sympathy because I would like that at times. But, you know, he doesn't get to do what he really apparently from all the interviews that he's done today and been very gracious, I think, in somewhat of doing these interviews. Really enjoyed managing, really got excited about doing it, and now he doesn't get to. But it was definitely time. You're both right. Yeah, the pressure just seemed to be overwhelming for this to happen. And if they didn't make this move pretty soon, it felt like they were just going to be playing out the string. That they knew that they would make, maybe they'd make the change in the offseason, but if you didn't do it now, nothing was going to change, and that wasn't acceptable. And surprisingly, it is just very interesting to see how this all went down. Now, it kind of ties in, perhaps. Tara, I want to ask you, do you think Mark Saxon feels like he got Mike Matheny fired? Because after this last couple of weeks of what he's written, it really feels like those were the final straws.
I 100% think that Mark Saxon feels like he got Mike Matheny fired. Whether that's actually the reason Mike Matheny got fired or not is a completely different story. But, you know, he's taking a lot of heat, from myself included, for kind of the way that he approached both of those stories regarding Dexter Fowler and then with Bud Norris and Mike Matheny and Jordan Hicks. None of us are in that clubhouse to know what the truth actually is behind all of the comments that have happened. And that's not really the point, but I think regardless of where the truth lies, it revealed a fracture in the way that Mike Matheny relates to the current crop of St. Louis Cardinals and potentially the future ones, that can't have been very encouraging to the ownership, to the front office, in trying to continue to invest in this guy and in what they believe to be his strength, and then continuing to see it revealed as maybe not the strength that they thought it was. So I think that The Athletic certainly thinks that Mark Saxon got Mike Matheny fired, but whether that was the final straw or not, we'll probably never know. But the constant revelations of real or manufactured clubhouse drama certainly didn't help Mike Matheny's case, I think, because let's be real, he wasn't ever there because he was a great baseball strategist. He was there because they thought he could work with people from all walks of life and bring them together to this common goal and inspire them to work as a team. And that simply wasn't happening for whatever the reason may be. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know that that was the reason, but it certainly didn't help.
Adam, there was at least some in that Norris Hicks story. Again, whether that story was blown out of proportion or not, and it kind of feels like it might have been, but there were some comments from Mike Matheny in that article that at least rumors seemed to have it that did not sit well with the DeWitts and some of the others in the organization, especially the idea that, you know, baseball is soft now and we ought to be tougher and that kind of thing. I mean, do you think that's true? Do you think that that's really kind of what they looked at and finally said this clubhouse culture is not what we want it to be?
I don't know if that's the case. I think if at most it was a small contributing factor to it, maybe a final nail in the coffin, but they're not going to, you know, I don't think there's any way they fire him over that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I will say when I read those articles or that article, specifically, I read it two or three times and I kept looking at trying to separate, you know, the things that were actually said from the things that Saxon was saying. And what I kept coming to is I didn't really care that much about the Norris Hicks thing, but Matheny looked bad in that. He, you know, to say that the game's become soft, it's, I don't know, I just don't know that I can agree with that. I think that's just a, you know, a byproduct of us learning to be better people in general. You know, I don't think people need to be, I just don't agree with the fact that, you know, rookies have to be treated like rookies. You know, they're a part of the team like anybody else. And I didn't like a lot of those comments. And so, you know, that doesn't look good for, you know, at all. But I don't think they would fire him over that. You know, if they wanted him to be their manager, they could do damage control. They could, you know, they could say the right things and it would probably blow over. But I do think that, you know, if they were already leaning that way, it may have been what pushed him over the edge.
And I think to add to that, because I thought it was interesting, although not unexpected, that the Cardinals said it was the on-field product, the on-field results that were the reason, which I don't think they would ever have said, yeah, we fired him over the comments he made to Mark Saxon, even if that was true. But I do think there's something to the fact that if they felt like there was suddenly this great disconnect between how Mike Matheny sees baseball and how they want their baseball team to be run, maybe the comments he made aren't the reason that he got fired, but they may have been sort of that final straw in the organization feeling like he's not the guy that is going to be capable of changing the on-field product with that mentality. So I don't know. I think there's probably a lot of layers to this, and it's probably, I mean, Mike Matheny even acknowledged that this is, he sort of saw the writing on the wall because there have been conversations about this for a year now. So it's not like, it's not like it was this huge surprise, but, I think that whatever came up this week in the conversations they had, finally got them to the point where they don't feel like he's the guy that can write the ship anymore at this point.
Yeah, I saw some comment from Matheny that basically said that I guess there had been a discussion at the end of the season last year, and they, I think basically, if not in so many words, had told him it was playoffs or bust for him, and he kind of felt like he needed to go out and win the World Series this year. And, you know, that definitely did not look like it was going to happen, so that probably did soften it. It didn't come out of nowhere, but I don't know. I've always said that the one thing that the DeWitts probably love more than Mike Matheny is prospects. And so having this, you know, this hullabaloo around Jordan Hicks may have helped shift their mindset, but it does sound like it was something that was coming along that was going to be done at some point in time. Even without the articles that came out, it just may have sped up the process a little bit. Because like you said, Adam, you know, going into Chicago, I kind of thought they might leave him there and see what they did in Chicago, and then, you know, maybe that would be the final straw. It's very interesting to see them do this, not only before that, but, you know, after the game on Saturday, you know, not even during the break. And there's good reasons for that, I guess, but it was just a little surprising to see, you know, Matheny go out in such a way. And, that, you know, the Cardinals had made their decision, but before the game, but I kind of wonder, Adam, you kind of wonder about John Mozeliak sitting through all these rain delays, knowing that he's going to have to fire Matheny. It's like, can this game get over with?
Yeah, it was especially funny to me because, well, I guess funny is not the right word, but before the game, he was out on the field doing a lot of things, and then he I don't remember what it was, but he was meeting with fans afterwards, after the game, and it came out in the press conference today that they made this decision on Friday. And so, like, I don't know, there's just something weird to me about him being out there on the field and, like, laughing with people and knowing that what they're going to do after the game. Like, I don't know. I don't know when the decision came to do it last night, but that was just funny to me to see him out on the field and doing all those things.
Yeah, I mean, it is difficult. It's got to be somewhat difficult because this isn't something that a smart team, and the Cardinals have tended to be that way. It's not something that's a knee-jerk reaction that they look and say, wow, we lost two to the Reds, you're fired. It's not that way, but so there's planning involved, and so to keep those relationships with that, you know, somewhat level of deception, I guess, has to be tough on everybody. And it, you know, Tara, you hear all the comments, it sounds like everybody's walking away from this with no hard feelings, which is, I guess, not something you can always say about a managerial change, but do we see not we here and maybe in the Cardinal organization, but do you think Mike Matheny will actually manage again somewhere along the way?
I do. I don't think it'll be right away. I think that if there's one thing that history tells us in baseball, it's that great managers are typically not great right away. And, you know, sometimes they have to hit rock bottom before they learn how to do better what they failed at before. So even in the interviews we heard today, I feel like Mike Matheny is very self-reflective of kind of where things went wrong. I think he's already identified where some of the weaknesses were that he knew were a problem. He just didn't know how to fix them. But, you know, I think there are a lot of people in this game who like him and who believed in him. And quite honestly, listening to the interview he did with Tom Ackerman, you know, I was telling some people earlier, it's not hard to see why he got the job and why they defended him as long as they did and why they tried to sort of will him to success. Because listening to that interview with him, you know, he's the kind of guy that you want your players to be around and that you want to see succeed in this game. So I think somebody will give him a shot. And obviously, I wish nothing but the best for him. I think that he'll have a lot of lessons to have learned from. And, you know, hopefully he'll be able to get past some of those things that were the roadblocks with this team.
Adam, what do you think?
I think he will probably get another managing job. I agree that, you know, you see a lot of the great managers around, and being fired from a previous job is almost a requirement.
Yeah,
it feels like. But I think he'll probably go either onto another team's coaching staff, or honestly, I think he might be a really good minor league coach where there's a lot more structure in the moves that he makes, and it's, you know, everything is, you know, optimistic, and it's all about, if you make it all about development, I think he would be a good coach. Take away the have to win aspect, and I think he would make a really good manager. And I think that might be the way he works his way back into a major league job, but somebody will give him a chance. You know, as much as Cardinal fans probably will think this sounds ridiculous, I bet there are fans and other fan bases thinking, like, oh man, Mike Matheny got fired. Like, bring him in, because we hate this manager we have now. I'm sure it happens almost everywhere. You know, you see Cardinal fans talking about Joe Girardi right now, and Yankees fans were trying to get rid of him a year ago. You know, it happens, because you don't know whether, I don't think you truly know whether a manager is good or bad unless you watch them on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And I just think there are going to be other fan bases that would love to have him, and I think someone else is going to give him a shot. I think he deserves a shot, because I think that he has baseball knowledge. He's not as dumb as Twitter makes him out to be. I just don't think he was not a good manager. You know, I think he has a lot to offer to baseball players, and I think he'll get that shot sooner than later.
I could see him maybe in an organization, but I don't know. I have problems really thinking that he's ever going to get that managerial spot again. It may be, I mean, you're right, they do tend to roll through managers, but things are different. I feel like, you know, with the way front offices are run nowadays, it's a little bit different. And I kind of, as we were talking, it kind of made me think about, and so I pulled it up to make sure, you know, Bob Brindley, back with the Diamondbacks, you know, won the World Series his first year, was out there for 3.5 seasons, so not as long as Matheny, and has never gotten another job since then. I don't know. I feel like Matheny doesn't, you know, if any team was going to take a chance on Mike Matheny, it was going to be the Cardinals. And I don't know that he has the ties somewhere else, but you never know. I mean, it could be that a situation where a team needs those, you know, leadership qualities, and they feel like he does, and especially if he gets some more time somewhere, you know, in a minor league system, like you said, where his optimism and positivity can, you know, help with development. You know, maybe that gives him a little bit of clarity on how to be a major league manager. But it'd be interesting. I'm sure for right now he goes home, and I don't think he's going to want to jump right back into the game, but I guess we'll see. So obviously that overshadowed anything else we were going to talk about tonight, but let's look at this season so far. And, you know, it puts, like you said, it puts a whole different filter on things. It did feel, you know, watching today's game, felt energized. It was very interesting to watch Mike Shildt in the post-game comments that were less agonizing to watch, I think. But
they were very refreshing.
Yes.
His post-game presser was a revelation.
It was like a bucket of cold water dumped on top of you, so as he would know a little bit about. But before that, I mean, I know we got to kind of put that a little bit to side, but Tara, if you were going to, you know, put a grade on this season so far, what would you grade it at?
Oh, man. I mean, it feels a little too obvious to say average. C+, I don't know. Because there have been some really horrific moments where you watch this team and think that, you know, there are several minor league teams that could beat them pretty easily. But there have been some pretty strong moments where we've all sort of thought, okay, maybe this is what Mike Matheny keeps alluding to, and they're finally going to go on a run. But then they just haven't. So it's been the same sort of status quo that we've seen the last couple of years, where they hover right around that 500 mark and can't ever seem to gain any steam from there. So anything more than pretty much average to me seems a little bit gracious. That said, there are a lot of teams in baseball right now who would love to be one game over 500. So I don't know, maybe perspective would change the answer there.
Hey, Cardinals are two games over 500.
So. Oh, today they are. Yeah. Yes, that's right. They did win today. I sort of just assumed they wouldn't. So somehow in my brain, it's stuck at one game over 500.
Walk that out.
Yeah.
They're 1-0. That's what you're looking at. It's
right. Yeah. Exactly.
Adam, what are you looking at here?
I think I would give them a C-. You know, they're just not quite living up to what I think we could accept. You know, I think if they were three or four games over 500, maybe five, I think we could sit here and say, like, you know, maybe they're not up to expectations, but like, they're not playing that terribly. But I think, they're just, I don't know, for me, they're just a peg below what I would say is acceptable. Because part of it is, you know, weighing it against preseason expectations. You know, I said, you know, as the season started, I kept saying I would guess 89 wins was where I thought they'd be. And they're not on pace for that. That was actually before the Greg Holland signing, which, you know, was supposed to be a nice bump. But, for me, it's they just can't go on a run. I mean, it's every time they start to look like something's going, it's you know, they fall on their faces and get crushed by the Reds, or, you know, it's just not quite there for me. And, you know, that's why I think this managerial change is just so exciting for so many people.
I agree. You're right. It's hard to do anything more than just that average or right in that area. I mean, this team is not failing even when you put it up against expectations, but it's not good either. And, you know, you look, you're 7.5 games behind now the Cubs, which is a team, you know, when you're chasing the Brewers, that's one thing. When you're chasing the Cubs, it's something else, the way they played the last few years. You're four games out of a wild card spot. You know, it is and you're 94 games into the season, so you're not, you know, this isn't the halfway point, this is well beyond, and so it's going to take a lot of work in the second half to even be presentable. So, yeah, it's a CC-minus type of team. There have been, there's been bright spots, there's been, you know, good players, there's been, things that, you know, we can say, yeah, this is good. But it's just so hard to remember them at times because it's just not consistent. And every time we get something good, something bad comes right behind it and wipes it out. So, Adam, if you were when we look at this, let's be a little bit optimistic here. What would you say was the best story of the first half?
Oh, for me, it was Miles Michaelis. You know, you got the guy signed out of Japan that nobody seemed to really know about. And then he has those first two spring training starts. And, you know, the organizations or the front office just hearing it from everywhere on how terrible of a signing it was, how they were dumpster diving again. And where would they be without him at this point? You know, he's got an ERA under 3. You know, today, I know today wasn't the greatest game, but he's been so efficient. He's been such a workhorse. You know, he's been, you know, there were people criticizing them for not bringing back Lance Lynn, but he's been exactly what you would hope. He's been best case scenario for what you would hope Lance Lynn would be, like absolute best case scenario, probably better, honestly. And so for me, I mean, it's been fun to watch him pitch. He's not that just fastball all the time like Lance Lynn. I love Lance Lynn. I don't mean to be trashing on him, even though I sound like I am, but I just love that big overhand curveball that he brings, and he seems like he's got a real good personality, you know, and he's got the crazy hair going on all the time. He's just so much fun to watch, and And to me, just watching him develop into a legit all-star has been probably the funnest thing for me this season.
What about you, Tara?
It sounds a little bit strange coming off of what we were just talking about and the stories that came out last week, but I think Jordan Hicks for me has been just a really fascinating project for the Cardinals this year in a season where there hasn't been a whole lot of interest in a lot of other ways, just because I think what they're trying to do with him is really, really hard. And he's been really, really good. And he hasn't been without the moments where you realize, oh, this kid's super young and he had not pitched above A ball before, and I can see why. Or I can see that coming into play here. But I just think he's watching someone with that much talent and that much just composure, take it all in and seemingly improve on the fly in a way that very few people are capable of doing has been really fun. Plus I think he's the kind of guy that fans can rally around, especially when he throws 105. And it's fun when you see somebody that can do something that pretty much no one else can do. And they get to be on your team instead of the team that you're playing against.
Yeah, it was one of the few times this year that the Cardinals have made national headlines in a good way.
Yeah.
So we gotta like that. I like both of those answers, and I would probably have picked one of them if y'all hadn't. But now I have to do something different. And I will say, I'll go with Yadier Molina, because we continue to think that Father Time is gonna get him. And if Father Time can't, Jordan Hicks tried to. But to see him, you know, to see him have that kind of injury, to come back well before I think anybody really expected, well, anybody expected a normal player to come back. We always kind of knew that Yadi was going to be healing quickly. And then to have the season that he's having so far, you know, we continue to talk about that contract and, you know, how ugly it could be, but you have to give it to Yadi because he's Yadi. And right now, he's, you know, earning every bit of it. You know, 13 home runs and hitting .274, and one of the few guys that has produced consistent offense all the way around. And his defense may not be what it has been in the past, but it's still, you know, he's still a top catcher all the way around. Just to see that, and to see that at 36 as he just turned, a couple days ago. Is pretty remarkable, and it's kind of one of those stories it's been that underlying current, that the one thing, or at least one of the things that has kept this team buoyant, throughout the first half. So it's very interesting to see that. Tara, if you had to pick your biggest disappointment then from the first half, which, I mean, there's plenty to choose from, but,
how much time do we have?
Yeah. Where are you going with that one?
Man, I honestly, I love the guy, but I feel like it has to be Tommy Pham for me, because there was so much buildup and there was so much hype and there was so much talk, a lot of which came from him directly, about how disrespected he'd been in a game and how he'd just never really gotten the chance. And all of that, his season this year doesn't change that fact, or those stories, or the challenge it's been for him to get to this point. But watching him outside of what the first month of the season, has really been a struggle. And, it's hard. It's painful to watch because we know how badly he wants to fix it, and he just hasn't been able to. You know, there's been talk about how he's going to work with a swing coach over the All-Star break, and how he hasn't taken a day off since like January. And I think that might be part of his problem, but good luck convincing Tommy Pham to take a day off. But it's hard to watch because, you know, the entire outfield, has been quite the disappointment, but, you know, I think Tommy Pham was the guy that we felt like last year made such a difference in the overall feel of the team. And You know, he doesn't really have grounds to make that sort of an impact when he's playing like he has been lately. So that's, whether it's a vision thing or a mechanics thing or a mental thing, I don't know. But, man, that's been frustrating to watch.
Yeah, and I mean, a guy that, you know, famously bet on himself not signing, you know, any sort of long-term contract, not even accepting whatever the Cardinals got him. He's, you know, he renewed at basically the minimum or pretty close to it, thinking that he's going to have this great year, and it hasn't been that way for whatever reason. Now, you know, he did have a good game today coming in when Harrison Bader went out, and you hope that maybe that gets him into the All-Star break on the right frame of mind, but... yeah, that's tough to see what he could be, because that this, you know, offense has been the story for a long bit, and if he's healthy and going, when Matt Carpenter got going, this team looks a lot different. Adam, what about you?
For me, this dates all the way back to the offseason, but it's Marcell Ozuna. He, you know, he was talked about as this, you know, big thumper in the middle of the order, and I don't know if you followed me in the off season. I was all about Christian Yelich, and I understand things didn't work out to where they could get him. But I look at this team and see where they need. It seems like they need a player, sort of like Fam was last year, that's just good at everything. And to me, that's Yelich. I don't know. I'll stop talking about him. But with Ozuna, you know, I didn't. He was the last guy out of that Miami outfield I wanted, and I wasn't upset with the trade because I didn't think they gave up a lot with, you know, Sierra and Alcantara. I didn't really care that they went in that trade. So the trade overall I liked, but I didn't think he was the guy. You know, I didn't understand where this massive power jump came from last year, and I just didn't believe in it. You know, I thought he'd be a good hitter, and that's part of where the disappointment comes from, because I thought he would be good enough to where they could slot him forth and have these three on-base machines in front of him, which that hasn't obviously worked either. But I thought he'd be good enough to slot in there and really drive in a lot of runs, and that hasn't been the case. He hasn't even been a league average hitter, which... that I didn't expect. He just keeps crushing the ball into the ground. And I think, you know, I think he's a streaky guy. And I think there's a good chance he goes on a tear at some point in the second half and gets his numbers back up, you know, around where his career numbers are. But for the most part, it's just he's not been the lineup transformation that a lot of people thought he would be. And It's just so disappointing to me because it played right into my skepticism, which has been really disheartening.
Yeah, you hate to be right. I get that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I agree. I mean, I never am that negative about these things, but I did think, you know, even if you get 80% of what he got last year, that's still a much better player than the Cardinals have had, and we're just not, you know, we're getting more of that. What, 2015, 2016 Marcell Ozuna instead of last year's version, and you know, maybe things will change with the new hitting coaches and you know, or a different mindset, a different clubhouse or whatever, but yeah, right now that's a tough one to top. Which now means I have to go find another guy.
Sorry.
There are options, don't
worry. Yes, there are. I was going through here. You know, selfishly, I would have to mention Tyler Lyons, and the patron pitcher of the blog has not pitched as well as I think he should have, or I think he can, but there's some injury issues and things of that nature in that one. Boy, yeah, you do look at Greg Holland. Most of us did not necessarily think that the Greg Holland trade was necessary. Of course, if we'd known Dominic Leon wasn't going to pitch most of the year and things of that nature, maybe we would have understood it. But, you know, you get Greg Holland and you think, okay, you've got Holland, you've got Norris, you've got all these different arms. The bullpen is going to be such a lockdown thing. And then to see Holland, I mean, it's not even that Holland's, like, questionably bad. I mean, he is, like, historically bad. And he's shown some signs, you know, after coming back from this injury that maybe he's there, but then, you know, then he blows up again. I guess the only good thing is Matheny never did really anoint him as the closer and put him into that. And that's, you know, for all the grief that he gets about bullpen management, and that's mostly deserved, he never, for the fact that he is seemingly advocated for Greg Holland, he never did seem to fall into the trap of putting him into a whole lot of high leverage situations, especially after things looked ugly. So I think that's, you know, like you said, there's so many different options. You could talk about Adam Wainwright and how he looked before he got hurt, and the fact that he's probably going to be out until, you know, they're probably keeping him out until September, and hopefully he gets, you know, some sort of, you know, token send-off type of thing, but it really looks like it's the end of Adam Wainwright's line with the Cardinals, and so many other things. You know, Luke Gregerson pitching more games in the minors than he has in the majors, which is not a good thing for the guy that they said was going to be the closer. you know, you've got Matt Carpenter's first half, or the first month, although that's been kind of wiped out. And then you've got Dexter Fowler, and I think that's, you know, with all the stuff that gone around Dexter, I think that's the storyline that we talk about the most. Tara, now that there is this change, and of course we saw Dexter Fowler hit a home run today, is there a path for Dexter Fowler to return to being a productive member of the Cardinals?
Oh, I absolutely think there is, but I think that it depends entirely on his production at this point, because the, I don't know if excuse is the right word, but if the excuse of not being able to work well with the manager seems to be off the table. So at this point, it's just going to be about Dexter Fowler, you know, putting his money where his mouth is, so to speak, and performing on the field the way that he continues to say he's capable of, and that a lot of people believe that he can be. I don't know where that help comes from. I don't know that there's really been a whole lot of conversation about that, about what it is that has been the problem with Dexter Fowler, and I'm not gonna go down the rabbit hole of effort, because I think that's a very tiny sliver of the puzzle here. But the path for Dexter Fowler to, you know, take back his spot in right field every day in the starting lineup is for Dexter Fowler to start producing. You know, a home run every now and then is great, and it's exciting, and it gives you a reason to think that the productive version of Fowler is still there. But I also think that people need to be realistic in what that productive version looks like, because it's not, he's not going to be a Gold Glover. He's likely not going to reach all-star caliber offensive numbers this season. And that's okay. That's not the only way for him to earn a spot on this team, but he just has to start playing better. That's all there is to it at this point. Like I said, with the whole managerial conflict, at least in theory, out of the way, maybe that allows him to, I don't know, focus more on baseball, but whatever it is, he just has to start putting up the numbers if he wants to earn back the respect along with the place on the field every day.
You know, Adam, that outfield seems to be a issue that, you know, Mike Matheny did a fair job with this year with all the different options that are stuck, but with a change, are we going to see Harrison Bader take over more time for FAM and giving Fowler a try opportunity to do this? Or are these both going to get somewhat supplanted by Jose Martinez? They're his idea of the idea of putting him in the outfield.
That's, you've put me in a position that's impossible to answer there.
That's what he does to me every week.
I mean, it's tough. I mean, I agree with basically everything that Tara said about Fowler. It's if he hits like he did the last 2 years, he'll be in the lineup. He'll be worth being in the lineup. The problem is that's still not that productive of a player because of his defense. And I think I honestly think giving him to right field has made things worse, because I feel like when I watch Fowler, he ranges to the ball pretty well. If it's just going and catching a ball, he gets to those pretty well. But it's like when the ball is on the ground and he has to go chase it down and get the ball in, it feels like the runner always gets an extra base over what I think they should. And I think playing right field where the ball gets into the corner is a bigger issue for him. So it's going to be tough for him to sort of get out of his own way to where his offense can really shine through. Not that I don't think he can do it, because the hitter he was last year was quite impressive when he was on the field. He was a really good hitter. And if he hits like that, he's got to play. As far as FAM, that's the part that's tough for me to say, because I believe in him so much, but he's gotten into a position where you know, even I, who believes in him, has to start to wonder, you know, is he just this crazy streaky player where, you know, he was amazing last year, but, you know, he's had times in the past where he's been in the majors and been terrible. It was, you know, most of the 2016 season he was terrible in the majors. And on top of that, his defense has struggled in center field at times too. So it's tough to say. It's hard to argue with playing Bader, because of the reasons everybody loves him. I mean, his defense is incredible. He's always going all out on every play. Hopefully he's not too injured after today, but, another aspect to it that I haven't quite understood is Ozuna never gets the day off. Mm-hmm. And he's not really been better than the other two, honestly. And so I don't, you know, I think it's easy to get your fourth outfielder time. And I think four guys for three spots, you can make that work. You can get guys, you know, I don't know the math, but you can get guys four or five starts per week and without too much issue. So I don't see why they can't do that going forward until three guys show up or whoever shows up starts playing every day. Because beyond that, because right now Bader has shown he needs to play, but you're also committed to the other three. So getting a solid timeshare is probably the way to go until somebody stands out.
Yeah, I mean, especially with FAM and Bader being able to play all the outfield positions, you would think, assuming you're flexible on Ozuna, and I think that's going to be, I mean, there's going to be a lot of different things that we're going to watch and see how they're different under Mike Shildt than they were under Mike Matheny, but that may be one of the first ones, is to see how often he's, you know, willing to sit Ozuna or, you know, play him in different positions and things like that. I think if the lineup that we saw today is any indication, Mike Shildt's going to think about a lot of things quite a bit differently than Mike Matheny did. So that should be interesting. And trying to juggle that in, and then, you know, what Jose Martinez looks like. Because we're seeing, for the fact that he's hitting, Taro, we're seeing a lot less of Jose Martinez over the last couple of weeks. Even though he's still one of the best bats overall on the squad, does this kind of start working him toward, you know, a trade out the door in the next week or two?
I think that likely makes the most sense for the Cardinals, assuming they get some of that offense back in return. We've talked about this a lot since the offseason, that how Jose Martinez fits into this roster is quite puzzling. But when you see the offensive numbers he puts up, when you see the fact that there's no one in baseball that he seems to be intimidated by as far as opposing pitchers, it's hard to you know, put him in the trade chip pile because of what he can provide for you in the moment. But he's a defensive liability no matter where you put him on the field. And, you know, at some point the Cardinals have too many guys playing out of position as it is, and you have to start closing the gap somewhere. The defense this season has been horrendous, all over the field, and You know, Jose Martinez is one of those pieces that is movable at this point. So how he fits into this team going forward, I think, is highly debatable. I think that if you can find an American League team that you can get a solid return from, it makes a lot more sense for him to play where he doesn't have to play defense all the time in order to still contribute offensively. But I don't know if you know this, Daniel, it takes two teams to trade in baseball. So they're going to have to find someone else who wants to play along.
Yeah, and that is the kicker. I mean, you've kind of seen some people that have done some of the work of, you know, who might be, you know, looking at those, you know, needing something like that or might be interested in it. But I don't know. I think that's good. I still feel like, yeah, that's the easiest thing to do to alleviate some of this roster clog that we're seeing. And it's going to be kind of interesting to see if that mindset, you know, now that they've, you know, broken the seal, if you will, by letting Matheny go, will they be more interested in, you know, being more aggressive, more creative, more, you know, just do something a little bit larger than bringing in a lefty reliever somewhere along the way at the trade deadline. And we'll have to still wait and see on that one, because as some have pointed out, now that Mike Matheny is gone, some of those pressures, some of the focus, especially of the fans, starts turning toward Mo, mainly for Mo, because nobody actually thinks about Mike Gersh very much, including, it feels like Mo.
He must have the safest job in all the land, because no one even knows that he has a job most days.
Right. But he's just going to keep walking, coming in, sitting in his office, and hoping nobody actually sees him. I'm sure there's more to it than that. It just doesn't seem like it from our point of view. So yeah, I think that's going to be kind of interesting to watch. I mean, lots of, like you said, this has kind of given that jolt, that idea of, hey, now we want to see what's going to be different with Mike Shildt. We now want to see what the front office is going to do, what they think about this season. It has made some sort of shift in our mindset, seeing what things are going to do. All right. As we start to get closer to the end of this, Adam, I'm going to start with you. Who's the MVP of the team so far?
For me, it's Matt Carpenter, which sounds crazy to be saying after his first 6 weeks of the season, but, man, he is crushing the ball. You could easily argue he's having the best offensive year of his career. So last year, we characterized as a down year for him, and it was, but he was still pretty good, and he's already, so last year he had a 3.1 WAR on the season, and this year, coming in today, he was at 3.1 WAR. Like, he's already matched last season's production by that metric, which is pretty wild. It's just unbelievable to me how hot he's gotten and how he just completely turned his season around in about a month, really. So yeah, for me, that's it. You know, that kind of offensive production is something they don't have at any other spot in the lineup.
Tara, what about you?
Well, the only name I wrote down was Matt Carpenter. and I thought...
It's fine to everybody agree on this. That's fine.
I thought that I was going to have to defend that much more dramatically. But no, I completely agree, Adam. I think that it's been absolutely remarkable to see the turnaround in Matt Carpenter. And not just that... Okay, he went from being pretty terrible to looking a lot more like Matt Carpenter. But the fact that the numbers of his season so far are as remarkable as they are just on their own. I mean, if you didn't know that up through, what was it, like May 14th or something, that he was hitting under 200 on the season, you'd have no idea that he'd had a terrible start to the year, because his numbers are so good. That's why it was so interesting to me to have the whole All-Star game conversation, with a fan base that doesn't even want Matt Carpenter to be an all-star for some strange and inexplicable reason, because the numbers are there. I mean, you put his numbers up side by side with some of those other guys that are all-stars, or at least were all-star caliber players, and he's right there. So for me, the preseason conversations when we were trying to decide who was going to be the key for the Cardinals this year, I've been saying Matt Carpenter all along, because his ability to produce at this high a level is absolutely crucial for this team to be anywhere near what it's capable of. Now, as it's turned out, you can't have that, but also four other guys dramatically underperforming. So, you know, you win some, you lose some. But for me, Matt Carpenter and the way he turned this into a successful first half after the way it started is pretty hard to beat.
Yeah, you always hear, like, Matt Carpenter, I don't know, you hear on Twitter, like, Matt Carpenter used to be a really good hitter, but now they need to move him. But, like, on this season so far, he has a 903 OPS, and the next highest he's ever had is 885 in 2016. Like, that's just unreal to me that he's turned his season around that much.
And look, I still think the whole Matt Carpenter can only hit when he's batting leadoff thing is one of the most bizarre things I've ever heard in my life. But if it's working, I don't really care. Let him hit leadoff and keep being the incredible hitter that he is. For whatever reason, that top spot seems to bring out the best in him. So whether that's the reason or not, I don't know if we'll ever know, but I'm okay with it as long as he keeps hitting there.
It was.
Yeah, and so, like, what I want to add on that is I wanted him to hit third coming into the year. Because I don't believe in the whole leadoff thing either. But that was because they had what I thought was a great leadoff hitter in Dexter Fowler. And so that's out the window. So at this point, I think he's their best leadoff option.
Yeah, anyway. I was talking to somebody about that today who was suggesting that Matt Carpenter needed to be moved out of the leadoff spot. And like yourself, I've been a proponent of him moving down in the order because I feel like he can drive in more runs that way. But you're right. They don't really have a good alternate option right now to hit leadoff. So as long as he's there and hitting well and nobody else is stepping up to claim that spot, I don't see any reason to change that part of the lineup. There are plenty of other things that could be changed. Let's leave that one alone because it's working.
Yeah, it was pretty noticeable that today when they asked Mike Schultz about, you know, how he created that lineup, and he, you know, he said, well, you know, you start out with Carp because he's leadoff, you know, I mean, and it was like, you know, and he kind of had that smile, but it was like, that's where he's going to be, and that's where he needs to be, and it seems to have worked pretty well, 2 days in a row leading off the game with a home run. I like that somewhat.
I'll take it.
Yeah, take that. Yeah, it's difficult to say anybody other than Matt Carpenter, because you're right, the last 2 months have been as hot as I think we've seen anybody since Albert Pujols left town. And it is remarkable to look and its overall numbers. And I, you know, if you broke that out, and I didn't, so I'm not going to try to do it now, but, just to see how good he would have been for the last 2 months, it's pretty crazy. And like I said, I think, you know, you can put Yachty, you know, a distant second or somewhere in that, you know, others receiving votes category. Just because of what the stability that he's brought to the team. But, yeah, I think that's pretty obvious. Okay, so Terry, you get to start with the Cy Young for the team. Who's been the best pitcher?
I think it's hard to go away from the only all-star in Miles Michaelis. And I know, you know, we already talked a little bit about him, but I would just echo that. I think he's been so much fun to watch because of the way that he seemingly came out of nowhere. And I know I wasn't super thrilled about bringing him in as kind of the big off-season pitching acquisition. But he's so much fun to watch pitch, because what he does is not this crazy high-velocity just throw darts up there and hope nobody makes contact kind of thing that we see from so many people, including Jordan Hicks, to be fair, who I brought up earlier. But it's so methodical and it's so controlled. And there's so much dynamic to what he does and how he does it, and keeping hitters off balance. He's absolutely fascinating to watch, and just in general as a human being, I think he's a weird dude, and I mean that in the best way possible. And I think that without him, I'd hate to imagine where the Cardinals would be at this point.
Given your earlier answer, I have a feeling you're just going to kind of second what Tara said.
Yeah, it's time for someone else to steal my answer. But yeah, it's got to be Miles Michaelis. I actually loved the signing at the time, but only because Fangraphs had an article the day before they signed him saying, "Hey, this guy might actually be really good," and that was kind of eye opening to me. You know, I had read his name on like free agent list, but I had no idea who he was before I read that article. And then the next day the Cardinals signed him, and I was pretty excited about it just because of that article I read the day before. But it's crazy because in an era that is all about strikeouts for pitchers, he's doing it in ways that are unconventional. He doesn't strike out a lot of hitters, but I think for me, I think you need sort of, it's like sort of a pyramid. You need either, you have a pyramid, you have strikeouts, walks, and ground balls. You've got to have two of the three, and he gets a lot of ground balls and he walks nearly nobody. So I think that shows that it's sustainable, and maybe not to the extent we're seeing, but overall I think he's a really quality pitcher, and it's impressive to see somebody can go over to Japan and really work and turn their career around, because his career was not looking very promising while he was over here beforehand.
Yeah, I don't really have anything extra to add to that because y'all have covered it pretty well. And there isn't.
That's what happens when you always ask the questions first.
I know. That's fine. Because people would much rather hear y'all talk about it than me. So it works out for everybody. Unlike the hitters, it's very difficult to even see anybody else in the conversation. I mean, Jack Flaherty has had some amazing games, but he's a young pitcher and that has occasionally blown up. Jordan Hicks was the talk of baseball, but we've seen him give up runs in four straight outings, and you start to wonder what all that's going to be like. And then there's Carlos Martinez, who we still can't get a handle on, although he's starting to look more like the Carlos that we're used to. You know, I guess the only other real theoretical option, and again, you have to factor out the Saxon story, but that's Bud Norris, because nobody really expected, when Bud Norris was signed, I think the ones of us that were fine with it said it's $3 million and Bud Norris is going to pitch the seventh or eighth, and he had a really good year last year, and, he's not going to be the closer, so it's not going to really matter. And, well, he has
surprise
been. Yeah, imagine how baseball works. But, and he's proven, throughout the season, throughout, spring training on, to be a very reliable starter. I think some of us still have this idea of holding our breath, wondering when it's all going to go south, because we're still kind of used to that with Cardinal closers, that, they may be good for a while, and then something's going to happen, and they're going to be, completely unreliable. But Norris hasn't hit that yet, and maybe he'll, we'll see if he's around in St. Louis after the season, but so far that's been a very pleasant surprise, to have him be as dominant as he is. And, I mean, he's been strong enough that they never did shift Jordan Hicks into the ninth, or haven't as of yet, haven't needed to, which lets him develop a little bit better. So, like I said, Michaelis is miles above everybody else. Yes, I did that on purpose.
See what you did there?
Yeah. Subtle, but it's there. But I guess Bud Norris would also somewhat be in the conversation. All right, so we have hit the break. The Cardinals are what we have seen them be. Tara, if you had to fix one aspect of this team, just there was one thing that you could fix for the second half, what would it be?
The thing that I would do would be to put Zach Gifford's phone number in Marcell Ozuna's phone and tell him to not talk to anyone else. No, I really do think that Ozuna is incredibly important to the second half, especially if he's going to be cemented, like literally cement blocks in the four spot. No matter what happens, he's got to start hitting and he's got to figure it out. And yes, he's a streaky guy and no, he's not, maybe the organization changing player that I think a lot of people hoped he would be. But you know, we've talked about that, on our shows all season. I don't think that that was ever a realistic expectation of Marcell Ozuna. But for this team to really get anything going offensively, pick any one of them, whether it's Dexter Fowler or Tommy Pham or Marcell Ozuna. But I'm going to say that Ozuna is the guy that seems to have some obvious things that can be fixed, obvious to someone like Zach, which is why I said that, who will sit and analyze that swing and his batting stance and his mechanics and find the difference between what's not working and what he was doing when it did work. But, you know, if that's the kind of mechanical changes that can be made, then I would certainly like to think that someone who actually gets paid to analyze swings would be able to figure that out and help him get back on track. So that would be the first thing that I would fix, because I think it might create enough offensive momentum that it would take some of the pressure off everybody else.
Fair enough. Adam, what about you?
So you sent us these questions a few days ago, and on my little notepad here, I had written down, fire Mike Matheny and give the reins to Mike Schill. So
you're done.
Check that out. Beyond that, I would fix the bullpen. And I know that's easier said than done because there's so many issues, but they have such a strong pitching staff starting that in a lot of these games, and you know, I think the offense has pieces to put it together on their own. And you know, I thought that the bullpen coming into the year, and I'm just not sure that's the case. And I think they're only one solid arm away from that happening, and part of that involves Brevia coming back up. But I think I would try to make a trade for a late inning reliever that has some additional control, somebody like Michael Givens from Baltimore, or maybe Kirby Yates from the Padres. I'm just pulling them in. I don't know. I think Kyle Barraclough has years. It's the bullpen. There are plenty of options of, you know, late inning arms that have control on bad teams as well that'll be tradable. So I think adding another arm back there and just turning these, I think it would help turn these one or two run games into wins. And I think that's going to be extremely important because the starting pitching is obviously the strength of this team. And I don't expect that to change. And so just finding a way to limit runs as best as possible, I think is going to be what's important.
Yeah. And I kind of, you know, my pick, but it would take probably waving a magic wand because I don't know that there's any good way to fix it, would be to, you know, to have a little bit more energy and see the defense tightened up. You know, watching the Reds on Friday and Saturday, you know, they kind of played with that aggressive hustle that, you know, for, you know, Billy Hamilton's actually covering every single solitary inch of the field. But they were it just felt like they, you know, were a little bit crisper, a little bit sharper. I'd like to see the Cardinals return to that. And again, I don't know that there's a way to, you know, there's no obvious way to fix that. You know, that we've been, you know, that's why they brought Jose Oquindo back. That's one of the reasons Mike Shields is there. You know, maybe that the voice is clearer now and they can do things that, you know, get that focus on the field. But, you know, I think we'd all like to be excited about watching Cardinal baseball again. And, you know, seeing some energy out there would be a huge thing. Cause, you know, I know Saturday wasn't what got Mike Matheny fired, but it could have. You know, watching that game and watching it just completely fall apart. And then, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, that game up in Milwaukee, just seeing really poor efforts. And again, I'm not going down, like Tara said, not going down the rabbit hole here. I'm just saying that, you know, for those games, they did not look good at all, and it didn't look like they gave much effort. So you'd like to see a little bit better games played out of that. And, you know, again, it all kind of works together. If the offense goes, then and the pitching staff goes, and, you know, probably they've got that extra step in their stride and maybe focus a little bit better. But I'd like to see that. And, you know, again, we'd like to be able to enjoy the games down the stretch. And, again, hopefully we will now that things are changing a little bit. I think we've covered a lot of stuff here, but Tara, is there anything that we should have mentioned that we didn't?
Boy, I feel like we have hit on all the important things, at least, except, I mean, if you're asking me, we have not talked nearly enough about Colton Wong's defense, fair but enough. That's just me.
Well, we should do that then. Let it not be said that we ignored Colton Wong's defense, because it has been. I think in the past, I think Colton had that knack or that rap of he can make great plays, but he can't make common ones. And this year, I can't really think of times where he has botched plays. I mean, he's pretty much playing all out defensively, and he's not taking his, you know, until recently sub 200 average out in the field with him.
Yeah, I think that's been the biggest difference for him this year. I mean, obviously, his offensive struggles are frustrating, and I can't imagine going to the field every day knowing that nothing that you're doing is working. But you're right. In the past, we've seen him take that to the field with him, and it's part of the reason he hasn't made those routines before. You know, because he was still thinking about the strikeout in the last inning with the bases loaded or whatever the case may be. So, I mean, I always make a big deal about Colton Wong doing really awesome things because I like the kid a lot. Which, you know, may be breaking news to anyone, who hasn't followed me on Twitter ever. But I think what he brings to this team defensively is one of the most exciting aspects of this pretty boring team over the first half. Especially on a team that makes so many errors defensively, to see Colton Wong, doing what he does and making it look so easy and being, one of the best second basemen in baseball this year. I think it's been a real testament to the growth mentally for him to, like we said, not take one particular part of the game and let it affect the other, for better or for worse. So, you know, he's playing with a little bit of confidence right now, and a confident Colton Wong is always a dangerous thing for opponents. So I hope that continues. I hope that, he gets the confidence boost that he needs to continue that. I did think it was really interesting, Dan McLaughlin has made a pretty big deal about how great he thinks Mike Schilt is, in the last, really the last couple of weeks, but obviously most notably today on the broadcast. But I did think it was interesting that he made a special note to say that he thinks that Colton Wong could really take off under Mike Schilt. It's no secret that the way Mike Matheny handled Colton Wong might have been what finally turned me against Mike Matheny. But that comment coming from someone else that wasn't me, I thought was really interesting. So I'm very curious to see how that sort of impact or perceived impact by Mike Schilt can affect some of these guys that, you know, maybe haven't quite had the freedom to progress in the game as we would have liked to see them.
Yeah, I mean, there are, you know, there's stories throughout baseball of a manager coming in, a new manager or whatever, and getting a guy and saying, look, you're my second baseman. You're going to play. Don't worry about what you do. You're going to play. And so that's, you know, maybe, and, you know, players respond to that at times. So hopefully he will as well. Adam, do you have anything to say about Colton Wong's defense, or do you have another topic you'd like us to touch on?
Well, I can talk about Colton Wong real quick. I think, you know, his defense this year has been nothing short of amazing. I don't know how anybody could discredit that. My stance has always been that I think, you know, the defense is awesome, and if he can be close to a league average hitting second baseman, he absolutely has to be out there every day. And early on in the year, that was a struggle. he wasn't doing anything offensively. And I think we all knew he was better than that. And lately he's been...
Not everybody. Just check my mentions every now and then.
You're probably right. And there were times where I thought, it was tough to play him every day through those, but, within the last, at least the last month, he's turned the season around. He's near his career averages on offense. I think he can do what his career average is offensively. And you add in that incredible defense, like he's a plus player easily, and he has some more offensive upside in there too. So, I think, based on what he's shown over the last month, I don't know how you can take him out of the lineup for anything more than a rest day here and there.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, he's, again, I was talking about how I wanted to see the defense looking better, and one of the ways you do that is by leaving Kelton Wong out there. And so hopefully, I expect that that's going to be the case, especially with a guy like Schilt that's come up through the organization who has worked with Kelton for quite some time and probably has a, we like to think that he has a pretty good finger on the pulse, if you were, of some of these guys that have come up through the organization. So hopefully we will. Adam, again, though, anything else you wanted to touch on before we wrap it up?
I do want to say, I just learned this about a couple, right before we started the show, and I thought it was fascinating. Did you guys know that Mike Schilt also has keratoconus?
Mm-hmm. I knew that because I think a couple of days ago Danny Mac mentioned it on a broadcast, but before that I hadn't heard it either.
Yeah, I had no idea, and it was the Scoops with Danny Mac. He reposted an interview with Schilt, and I listened to it, and I couldn't believe that. Like, what are the chances of that? We were talking about how Colton Wong take off under Schilt, and at this point, I think it might be fam too, because to have somebody that understands what he's going through in a way that really not many other people in the world could, I think that's a huge deal. And I think, I mean, there's no reason to question whether Sam will, put in the effort to get back there, but, I think just having somebody that knows day in and day out what he's going through can be a big positive.
Go ahead, Tara.
I completely agree, and I thought the same thing when I heard it the first time, which was obviously before he was the interim manager of the team. But I think it's going to be really interesting to see how Mike Schilt tries to relate to a lot of these players in a way that's different than the relationships he's built before in a different role. And I think Tommy Pham is one of those guys. I feel like Tommy's probably a guy that's a little bit hard to get close to, a guy who probably doesn't ask for a whole lot of help and is very determined to just sort of do it on his own. But I do think it's pretty rare for a condition and a circumstance that is that uncommon to be something that could be that common ground between, people from probably otherwise pretty different worlds, different walks of life, different, just everything about the normalcy of their lives is probably fairly different, I would imagine. But for them to have that common ground, I think is going to be really interesting to see how someone like Mike Schilt, who seems to be a pretty good communicator, which is new for this organization, I think, considering all the guys found out about the change in management, based on just whether they were watching Twitter or not, communication is going to be interesting between someone like Tommy Pham, and the manager. So, I think that's fascinating, and I'll be curious to see if it, has any impact on the way that he can relate to Tommy Pham.
Yeah, I think that, Schilt is actually like legally blind in his right eye or something like that, so, I guess
he said he was. Yeah, he said he was at some point, but he's had cornea transplants in both eyes. So I don't know if he's. I don't know how that any of that works. So,
and I guess if we start saying, "Can't you see the pitchers laboring out there?" Then maybe he really can't.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. I see what you did there. But anyway, apparently we're getting into the pun situations, so maybe it's time to wrap this up. But one last question, and it's a simple one. And Adam, we'll start with you. Do the Cardinals make the playoffs?
I thought you said it was a simple one.
Well, it's a yes or no one. Let's put it that way.
It might have been simple yesterday.
Yeah.
At this point, I will lean no, but I would not be surprised if they do, because I'm with DeWitt. I do believe in the talent on this team. I have from the start, and I didn't believe in the manager, and I think that was where a lot of the issues came from with his statements was, you know, well, if you believe in the talent, what are you doing? Where's the problem? And I think they've identified that. And I'm also a huge believer in Mike Schilt. I have been for a few years now. His story fascinates me. And I think, just the idea that he was sort of this liaison between the front office and Mike Matheny was strange to me, but I love that he was in that role. And so now I think you get, he feels like the perfect blend of old school fundamental baseball and an analytic driven approach. And I don't know, he feels like the perfect guy to be in that job and to turn this team around. I say that I liked the Mike Matheny signing at the time, so, you know, take that for what it's worth, but I'll lean down, but I think they're going to fall just short. I think they're going to make a turnaround in the second half.
Tara?
I would say the same, except that I would also add, I still think the NL Central is going to be really interesting. I don't know, maybe the Cubs run away with it in the second half and play like everyone predicted they would. Maybe the Brewers don't really have enough starting pitching to maintain the pace that they've been on. But I don't think anyone has put themselves in a position where it's quite clear that they're the division leaders and it's going to stay that way. So, and you know, to top it off, the Cardinals come out of this weekend, or out of the All-Star break rather, and play 8 of the next 11 games against the Cubs. So, I mean, if there's ever an opportunity to turn your season around with a little bit of a run, you know, those head-to-head games are really going to matter in this division. And, 36 hours ago, I would have told you there's no way this team makes the postseason, and in fact, they might not even finish third in the division. That's just the feeling that this team was creating. I think there's maybe a bit of naive hope at this point that Mike Schilt really is the guy to take them on a little bit of a journey that might push them close enough to at least make it interesting. So I still don't know that I think they're going to be able to overtake either the Cubs or the Brewers, which seems to be what they're going to need to do to sneak in, although there are certainly some other options for that second wild card. But I still am hesitant to say that they're good enough as it is right now to make that big run. But I do think more now than I have all season that it's at least going to be interesting to watch.
After these 2 weeks where we, you know, they played the Cubs 8 times, like Kara said, they have 6 more games with the Brewers throughout the season, all at Busch, and then there's only 3 more, the last 3 games of the year against Chicago. They're not going to have very many chances to do damage head to head after this stretch of games against the Cubs. So, yeah, I'm kind of with y'all. I think that I kind of feel like they're probably starting too late to make this, you know, miraculous run. I do think they'll play better, but I also worry about the Cubs have looked very good. They're winning when they can win a game on a walk-off grand slam by Jason Hayward. You got to start wondering, you know, I mean, what's going on up there? So, I mean, maybe they can sneak in as a wild card, but I think that might be asking. I mean, I'm guessing, I haven't looked, but I'm guessing playoff odds are like 25% or somewhere in that range. So, you know, again, maybe the Cardinals make some major change. Maybe they find some sort of leftover 2011 magic in a back closet somewhere that they can use. But I think on the whole, the safe betting is no. But it still doesn't mean that it can't be an interesting second half. All right. Well, Tara, Adam, appreciate you joining us tonight, or joining me tonight for the round table. And I look forward to seeing what the rest of the season brings for all of us. So until next time, good night.
Yeah, he plays it calm, but that man is funky. Yeah, but what can I say? I'm a C70 junkie.